Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, let's go. Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Once again, we are broadcasting from the IoT Solutions World Congress here in wonderful Barcelona, Spain, where food reigns supreme, especially paella. There's some drink involved into that, too, as well. And it's brought to you by those incredible folks at the Industrial Internet Consortium. I'm telling you, you need. So you're saying to yourself, self, I need to know more about this IoT stuff. And you're saying to yourself, well, self, where do I find this information? All right, it's iiconsortium.org. That's where you need to go. That's the one-stop shop for everything that's IoT-related. That's Internet or Industrial Internet Consortium. Go out there. They're wonderful people. They're passionate about your success and solving problems through the use of technology. We got a great interview today. His name is Chris Davis. He likes food. We know about that. He's with Simcon, and we're going to be talking smart cities because he's a VP, big thinker of smart cities. Chris, how you doing?
I'm great, man. Good to be here. Particularly since we're both from Louisiana, right?
Yeah. You. When did you move away from Louisiana?
We can't talk about that.
All good. I'm telling you, man, you having a good Congress?
I really am, yeah. It's, no jet lag. That's the most important thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's. We had jet lag. But it was a good jet lag because we were having a wonderful time with you last night.
Well, thank you. Thank you. The restaurant we went to, as I mentioned, I first ate there when I was a naval officer and a time far, far away. And
long, it's probably long around, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, right.
I'm going to tell you, it was fun, too, because you sit there and you eat the food and you share it all up because everything tastes, you got to try this. And, oh, you got to taste this. And then this is, it's such a wonderful experience. And it's in a great section of Barcelona, too.
Yeah, right off La Rambla. But you notice I didn't share mine, so.
You know, you're right.
I did the appetizer, but not the main.
You did. By the way, those are good appetizers. All right. Give the listeners a little background on who you are, why you're such an incredible professional, and then we're going to go into a little about smart cities.
Oh, I don't like to talk about myself too much, but I would just summarize it to saying.
Got a head of hair that I don't particularly flaunt it in front of me.
Thank my mother, right? I'm really passionate about clean technology and smart cities and working with cities and utilities and technology companies to enable good outcomes. So that's kind of my current deal. Long career in sales, marketing, business development, general management, traveled a lot, but it's all about having fun and doing good.
And solving problems.
Exactly.
I mean, we just got done talking to Richard Soley with IIC, and what was interesting is this whole technology and this push for technology, especially here, there's like 18, 19,000 people just roaming around the place. They've sort of transitioned into less about technology, which is important, and more about how do you solve problems through the use of technology.
It's the key. It's really the key.
It is.
If you can't do that, you don't deliver value.
How do you, with Simcon, how do you define that problem statement? How do they know they even have a problem?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
And
that's why I get paid the big bucks there, Chris.
I know. Everybody talks about the technology to solve problems.
Yep.
And I think what you need to do is to help cities and utilities and even commercial industrial people understand what the technology can do. And if you educate them well enough, they can actually come up with some use cases that none of us in this hall are, as technology providers, are smart enough to realize. So let me give you an example. So if I were to say to you, Scott, I'm the mayor of Schenectady, New York, and I've got a zombie problem. What do you think that would mean?
First off, I've never heard that example, but I would say, darn it, how do I get rid of the zombies? Because they're killing my people. And making more zombies.
Well,
that's what happens,
yeah,
right?
So we were talking to Mayor Gary McCarthy, mayor of Schenectady, great guy. He's going through a smart cities initiative with National Grid, Cisco, and us. We're talking to them about smart and connected street lighting, energy efficiency, sustainability, other smart city services. And he says, hey, I got this zombie problem. And people around the room are looking at him like, oh, is the guy crazy, right? And we had to ask Mr. Mayor, what is a zombie? He said, a zombie is an unpowered, vacant building that cannot be monitored by traditional means because it's got no power.
Oh,
and
wow.
So what happens is that we have 1,000 of them in town. They sometimes catch on fire. Often there's collateral damage to adjacent buildings because we have no way to monitor these vacant buildings and have the first responders, you know, police and fire, show up quickly. And so he said, you know, we're going to do streetlights and smart meters and smart traffic, and we've got all these networks deployed all over the place. Is there any way we could come up with a battery-powered wireless smoke detector that would detect if this building catches on fire? And so our guys, along with Cisco and whomever, went out to Lowe's, Home Depot. They bought a smoke detector fire alarm. They broke apart one of our streetlight controllers. They hardwired it together and said, yeah, proof of concept, we can do this. So he had a problem, you know, had a public safety problem, which for him translated into votes. You know, a fire next to City Hall is not good for votes, right?
It and might look good on the internet, a picture of that, man. That would, yeah, yeah, but I mean, it's not good for your career in politics.
No. So what you're finding is that city officials, once they understand the potential of the technology, they're coming up with use cases that solve real problems that most of us don't have a clue about because we're not out, you know, paving streets and fixing potholes and picking up garbage.
Right.
And doing all the things that, you know, city mayors and even governors are really good at doing.
But what's interesting about that, which is interesting, I didn't know that a vacant building with no power is a zombie, which is pretty cool. It's a good
A
good word picture, that's for sure. But here's what's interesting, is that I came to you with that problem. Let's say the mayor came to you with that problem. To be able to facilitate a solution through the use of technology and it not being some sort of just exorbitant cost or exorbitant, you know, challenge to try to develop, it can be done. And that's what we're talking about from a technology point of view. There's just, it can be done. You just give us the use case.
Yeah. I mean,
give us the challenge.
Yeah,
the real
issue, and, you know, I think one reason why you're seeing an explosion in IoT, Scott, is that the cost of the technology and the capability of the technology has, the cost has come down and the capability of the technology has gone up. So if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and you're saying, okay, I want a, you know, a combined carbon monoxide smoke detector that, you know, is networked in the house. I mean, those are what, $45 a piece. You know there's good margin, right?
Yeah.
So you can cobble together bits and pieces to prove out these use cases. And they're solving real problems. You know, we took a street light controller, which has a location capability because it has a GPS, it has a radio, it has communications.
Yeah.
We hardwired to a smoke detector and said, okay, if we light a fire near the smoke detector, it's going to generate an alarm that can be communicated back to a city operations center.
Right.
And they can know. And I don't remember the city exactly, but I want to say the city had 240 some fires and vacant buildings over a 2-year period, and it was $290 some million worth of damage. So if I can put, you know, one of these battery powered smoke detector fire alarms that communicates over a wireless network back to a, you know, a fire department, for example, what's the potential in terms of savings, right? And the mayor was really smart. He said, okay, you know, better first response, get people out there, keep the buildings from burning. He said, I also can have a revenue source. I can charge the building owner or whoever has the lien on the property, the bank, $25, $50 a month monitoring fee. So let's say I've got 1,000 buildings times $25 a month times 4.
There
what
you go.
Looking at there, right?
You're looking at some check.
$6,000.
Yeah.
You know?
See, that's different thinking.
100,000.
Yeah.
Whatever.
When you're saying 50, and I just
we had too much wine last night to do the math.
I just gave up. I was going to say, Chris, you do the math, and you can came up. He's like, yeah, that's $1 million. I would have said, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. But it's a revenue source that provides value.
It It does. But always, from my perspective, and we're going to go into the smart city and the what that means, but is that we have to do a better job at just getting out and understanding the problems. Like you went to that mayor in Schenectady and say, hey, what's the problem? And then and be able to have that conversation, because that's what you're all about.
Yeah, the cities will tell you. And fortunately, there are a number of organizations. The Smart Cities Council, there's another organization called the TM Forum. A lot of the big consultancies that are here, like Deloitte, for example,
yeah.
They all have smart city practices.
Right.
And so they have resources and people and planning guides and maturity models and right. things that cities can use. There are various ways they're utilized, but the key is to involve not only the city officials, the citizens are certainly a key element, but there are, ecosystems of other interested parties, universities, yeah. technology companies like us, and, they best start with, a plan. So to give you an example, the city of Boston 3.5 years ago published a strategic plan for, right. I believe it was 2030. And they later came out with an RFI. They sent it out very broadly. And the whole goal was to figure out what type of technology solutions could be deployed by people, could be academics, nonprofits, technology companies, whomever, to solve and address the problems
right.
and goals and objectives that were spelled out in that strategic plan. They wanted a response back in 10 pages or less. Don't sell us, just tell us what you can do. They got over 120, I think, responses, and most of them were pretty damn good. And it was, okay, we don't want to implement point solutions in smart cities. We want to do something that addresses the goals and objectives and the challenges that we've delineated and we've outlined in our strategic plan.
See, so that's a segue into the smart city. For me personally, define what a smart city is for the listeners out there.
All right. So there's sort of two tracks when you can define smart cities. And the smart city definition started out more on a technology track. And they were talking about the use of sensors and controls and, mm-hmm. ICT networks to gather all this data and do all this stuff, right? And, some people adhere to that. And if you Google smart cities, they can now, through effective dimming and brightening, save about another 10 to 20% on the energy because they're providing light levels when and where needed at what level. The other thing that happens is that a lot of utilities estimate that about 10% of streetlights are out at any point in time, even LEDs. And so they're expensive to repair. And so what happens if you put controls on them, you can now monitor and manage that lighting infrastructure, those assets, and know where you've got issues and fix them in a much more reasonable manner. The Energy Information Agency of the U.S. Department of Energy projects that most streetlights take about 2.6 truck trips, we call them truck rolls,
right.
to fix a light. And if you know what's going on in the light, you can oftentimes get that down to one if you're really good, but sort of the average is about 1.3. So if a truck trip cost anywhere from $200 down south where your roots are and where,
right,
where
right.
I came
right,
from,
right, right.
or up north where I now live, it could be $600 or $800. Huge savings. And you also have this whole component of keeping the citizens happy.
But there's also a safety component.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, come on.
High quality lighting
yeah.
relates to public safety.
Yeah.
LED lights, give the city a really good presentation. And you can dim lights. I live in a seacoast town on the North Shore of Massachusetts. We did not implement controls when we upgraded, but one of the things they talked about, we run the Merrimack River. We have a lot of concerts and events all year round. They wanted to be able to dim the park and street lights when the concerts are going on, and then when the things let out, bring the street lights up
right.
full. So most people walk, because it's a small community, walk downtown, they can get home safely and have good visibility. Or probably here in Barcelona when the bars let out, they would want to bring the street lights
out. They never let out.
I mean, they go all night, right?
They go all night. I mean, I've never heard that in the term of Barcelona. No, they keep on going. which is really interesting about just the solutions, right? And how the world is just changing. And we can sit there and say, okay, case in point, your example of where you live. It's a different feel too. It's not, it's like, it's safe, but it makes a place better to live.
Oh, absolutely. It provides the citizens a real comfort level.
It does.
And that's the end of the day. And like I said, everybody in our town walks. It's a big dog community. And I've got to say, the city looks great since we've upgraded 1,500 plus streetlights, even though they're not controlled.
On the Merrimack?
Yeah, on the Merrimack River, yeah.
And so now when the flood of people come on over there and start raising and buying homes, you're going to get mad about that, aren't you?
Well, I'm already in, so it'll help my property value. But, yeah, it happens to be a very popular place for both young families and empty nesters like us to move to.
Well, here's the funny thing, because it doesn't just stop with lighting. It doesn't just stop. I mean, for me personally, the future looks really unique. That's today. We're doing this today. This
Absolutely.
Is happening now, and it's different than what we did in the past. And things are changing so rapidly. And so from a future point of view, I mean, it's pretty, shall I say it? Come on. It's pretty bright. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're talking lighting. It's you're welcome.
Right.
Welcome alive.
Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson used to do that, you know?
So why? Yeah, absolutely, right?
Right. Yeah, so you raise a really good point, Scott. So when cities think about a smart cities plan, they often start with lighting. And the reason they start with lighting, as we talked about before, it has both tangible, you know, real payback and intangible benefits.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that it does is if you put in smart and connected lighting, you now have an infrastructure in place to enable other smart city services on outdoor infrastructure, i.e. streetlight poles, which are ubiquitous. You know, they're anywhere from 50 to 75 yards apart. And that's a very valuable piece of vertical real estate. And so there's a scrum going on amongst cities, utilities, and other service providers like telcos to figure out who can get access to the pole and how can they monetize that.
Yeah.
Because that pole, because it has power and it's everywhere, can host a lot of devices.
Yeah.
Small cells, air quality monitors.
Yep.
So it's road condition monitors. There are non-contact sensors you can mount on streetlight poles that will tell you what is the temperature of the asphalt or concrete, what's the temperature of the air above it, and can tell you, is there water on that? Is it ice? Is it snow? So you have, that's a safety component. So they're all trying to figure out, how do I manage and control that pole? So we're kind of positioned in a key way, because if we put our controls and our networks in place, then we can enable our business partners, who are the big boys, the network providers, and some of the telcos we're talking to be able to monetize those assets.
Yeah, see, what always, again, you talk, and I think the reality is, first off, you're focused on really trying to solve a problem. Whatever that problem is, they might not know it, but through dialogue, through the communication, you define a problem. And then because of the cost of technology has gone down dramatically, and the ability to be able to, the capabilities have gone up, that's all wonderful, all great, all spectacular. You just got to be in the game. If you're not in the game, you're not seeing this. You're not seeing the evolution. It's just like IIC. They were just saying, hey, I think there's something here to be, in the industrial internet consortium said, hey, there might be something here. But because they were in the game, they realized that it's not just technology. It's truly solving problems.
Oh, absolutely. And what I find interesting about this show and then coming up in Barcelona in the middle of November is the Smart Cities World Congress.
Yep.
So these shows have a similar flavor. And what's happened is that a lot of what you see in the industrial space started 20, 30 years ago. It was called computer integrated manufacturing. So that's, how do we make cities smarter? How do we make, factories smarter? How do we make them operate more efficiently, reduce our equipment downtime, and produce higher quality products, right? That same thing happened in buildings. And now you're seeing it happen outdoors. And what's enabling it outdoors is, you know, wireless infrastructures and the dropping cost of these sensors and controls and the emergence of platforms. And I say platform, in this case, I mean something that's, you know, software. You know, so it's edge computing, it's software running on the edge, it's sensors, it's these wireless networks or wired networks in some cases, and then cloud-based applications. So you're seeing this huge transition, and that really is driving adoption and enabling smart cities and smart utilities outdoors. And outdoors is hard, much harder than doing it indoors.
Yeah, but it's happening. Let's put it that
absolutely,
way.
Absolutely. Barcelona is a great example. They're one of the leading cities in Europe in terms of smart cities.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And they started with lighting.
Are you active out there on LinkedIn?
I am.
The answer is yes.
Not as active as I need to be.
You need to be.
Right.
You're going to be. At you listeners out there, that is Chris Davis. SynCon, professional extraordinaire. He's talking smart cities. You need to get a hold of this guy. I want you, listeners out there, to get a hold of him on LinkedIn, so it forces him to be actively engaged on LinkedIn.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Yeah, that's right. And all right, as always, this is brought to you by those wonderful people at Industrial Internet Consortium. That's iiconsortium.org. And you know, you're saying, oh gosh, Scott, I need to find out more. Well, you go out to iiconsortium.org. I guarantee you, man, you're going to find out more. And we are broadcasting IoT Solutions World Congress. Food is wonderful. Drink is wonderful. People are wonderful. It's a wonderful event right here. You need to get engaged. That's IoT Solutions World Congress. And they're all over the world. So anyway, be bold, be great, dare greatly. Change the world. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. We're going to have some more great interviews like the one we just have here right to my left, if you're out there on the video. So stay tuned.